I'd like to thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to Marcus More More Media Podcast. Arts, entertainment, and business. Yes, you can get all that here. I have a special show for you guys today. We are honoring an extraordinary actor here in New York City. He go by the name of John Mincy. Theater of Press, Tony, NYC. But before we get into some John Mincy and some of the shows he performed in, you know, in his career and whatnot, I just want to thank people from listening to Marcus More and More Media Podcast around the country, internationally. I'm humble, I'm grateful, and I'm thankful. But however, you know, ladies and gentlemen, if you find it in your kindest heart to donate $1.50 or whatever you can to help me to continue to, you know, travel and go places and report on news that sometimes get overlooked by mainstream news and media. And so this is important for everyday people in the community to be able to understand what's going on with people just like them, right? And so I realized that you don't necessarily have to be an actor on Broadway to shine like a star like John Mincy, okay? So this is part one. The name of this episode is Big Boys. And so this episode, John is, you know, going to be warming up the crowd. He have a dynamic warm-up with the crowd. Theater Press, everybody ever went to see a performance with John Mincy and see how he jokers and warm up the crowd is awesome. So I hope you enjoy it. The name of this episode is called Big Boys. So let's do it.
You say down, up, down, up, down. And when I say down, you say about you? Come here, brother.
John Mincy, Big Boss episode, Theater of Press. Rest in peace. Marcus Moore, More Media. In this episode, ladies and gentlemen, we have in everyday life sexual harassment on the job. And so in this episode here with Theater Press and John Mincy, rest in peace, you want to experience through your audio how sexual harassment happens on the job. And so we gonna listen it. Marquita, who is played by Maria Teresa, needs to have the time off for a quiet rehearsal, and apparently she can't get off by her manager, Diane. So we're gonna get into part two. More Media.
Of the bosses who work at the aforementioned large free worker center there, and laid out their demands, you know, with a show of force, with a small army behind them. So even six individual workers, you know, they showed up and made a statement today, a really powerful, resounding one. So we're definitely going to continue to monitor this. This is the first step, you know, definitely a great first step in this long-term battle in order to make sure that these workers get what they deserve at the end of the day. But I'll let someone else take it from here because I wasn't actually able to attend today. So if anyone who's in attendance would like to report on how the event went, what was the energy like, what was it like facing down the bosses, you know, how do you feel about the future?
We're talking about laundry mat workers, domestic workers here.
Please tell me.
So yeah, it was a fabulous event. We had ourselves about I think 7 or 8 people there, but it was maybe about 60 people. I'm not exactly sure how many people, but it was a big crowd of people that came from various organizations, and it was six women migrant workers. Who of course been working under horrible conditions, treated really badly, not, you know, in an abusive way by the bosses, as well as of course wage theft, which many migrant workers do not make the minimum wage for many, many years, and that is the wage theft. They also don't get breaks. Today was what they call Liberation Day, and they, basically, they went in that they wore aprons that said, "We are the union," basically. And, I mean, people should know that the Laundry Workers Center has done much, much research over many years documenting what are the conditions of people who work in laundromats. And for the most part, they're women and they're migrants, and they have these horrible working conditions. And so, part of what the Laundry Workers Center is attempting to do is to form a citywide independent union for laundromat workers. And this is kind of the beginning of this that got kicked off today. So it was, I didn't go downstairs because only it was a very small space. But from what I understand, because Tony Merkel reaffirmed, together, I can't imagine a more isolated or difficult situation of six women working in this crowded little basement with hot dryers and irons and all of that going, along with their legal status, and just feeling they had no right, they couldn't turn that around. Suddenly you have people behind you. The way the laundry workers organize is really to reaffirm that the strength is you yourself as a union. We are a union. We are the union. And then getting support. And so, you know, you kind of gather around the corner out of sight of the boss, and it's like,
I have been to a lot of different actions with PPA over the years, and usually they're always really massive actions that I've like ended up at with you guys and through all these different things. And I have to say that even the small, like, so I ran QDEP and we did stuff in front of immigration prisons for years, right, in front of ISIS headquarters, and we would have these small actions and people would be like, no one really turns out, and I'm like, but do you, like, how powerful they are, the small group of people there that are just like, no, we're here and we're taking up this space and we don't give a fuck about what you have to say, is like so powerful to me. Like, I went around the corner, I told Confesso
by the bosses, and as Ma'oma raised on this call last week, that they may need people to show up if that happens. And so hopefully we'll be able to, some of us anyway, will be able to help with that if that were to come down. The last thing I want to say is that the amazing thing, and I've said this so many times, is what the Laundry Workers Center does is train people. These women could not have gone down there and done what they did today and say what they said had they not spent a very long time training with them so that they would have the strength and the fortitude to go up against the boss today. So it doesn't just happen overnight. It happens over many months of training.
Our webinar, which was last Saturday, just over the weekend. So I can go first really quick and just talk about it for a second. I had the pleasure of co-hosting along with Terry, who's also on the call. We had a bunch of amazing speakers, including people like Jamila, who did an excellent just talk about what's going on at CUNY and something else we're going to get to later in the agenda as well. But I thought it was a really cool event. We had great speakers presenting different issues that, again, relate to different aspects of the working class. So we were talking about education, talking about healthcare. We had people representing, like Mahoma again was bringing up the point of what we've just been discussing, right? This laundry worker center action. So representing undocumented workers as well. This bringing all aspects of the struggle and making it, you know, clear to everyone that these are all parts of the working class struggle in which we all take part in every day. Building solidarity, really beginning to, you know, build relationships with your fellow workers. And if maybe you don't face specifically 100% the same problems, you know, you can definitely find solidarity with one another. It's powerful to hear people talk about their conditions, to hear people talk about their campaigns, their successes, their efforts to unionize in order to, you know, demand better conditions. This is what it's all about, y'all. So I had the pleasure to be able to co-chair that event, and I thought it was really great. We had some good discussion on it, and it's a campaign that's going to continue ongoing. So unfortunately, due to the ordinance that only 10 people or so, you know, we aren't allowed to be gathered in groups of more than 10 in New York City as of recently, because otherwise we would be doing these types of things.
Probably need to move on. So I guess, you know, as someone who was involved in organizing it, you know, you're always a little nervous about length of time, but it was great. And we also had Charles Jenkins from the Transit Workers Union and also the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. We also had someone from the Street Vendors Project who spoke about their absolutely horrid conditions that they face, which is that they're unable to get licenses and the city makes it close to impossible for them to get licenses, and then they have to spend all this money to buy them sort of illegally, and also they face total harassment by the NYPD. So also that was a talk that was given. And so it was, you know, afterwards, I wasn't sure exactly. I mean, I thought it was,
I apologize, y'all.
I'd like to once again like to thank everybody for listening locally and around the country to More Media Podcasts. Once again, I'd like to just thank y'all. Stay safe. Keep looking up. More Media. And also, if you feel like you like this here episode, please give me a like. Don't forget to donate. As I continue to come in community and get the stories that really impact where mainstream media don't go. This, ladies and gentlemen, is straight from the source right here in the community. These are the topics and the issues that is important to the everyday people. Thank you once again, and I'm More Media, and I still bring you that real news that the people want to hear about. Peace. I'm Marcus Moore, More Media. I'd like to thank y'all for checking in with me today. I go by the name of Marcus Moore, More Media. It's a lovely night here in Manhattan, New York City. I am currently in Manhattan right now. Today, ladies and gentlemen, there was a post that New York City had put out online, and I thought it was very disturbing, especially in these days and time of coronavirus 19. There's so many things going on, and you know, people are unpredicted about their future these days living in New York City. You know, people are leaving the city in droves. So many vacant apartments and places like that is just, you know, empty buildings. You know, the other day, a couple of days ago, the New York Post, I noticed they released an article, and I thought it was very disturbing. Very disturbing, and you know, in some cases, how low can you go? And so, it's really disgusting. It says, Bronx homeless services provider faces state criminal. Okay. And so, this is very interesting. The state attorney general has launched a sweeping criminal probe of the head of a politically connected Bronx homeless service provider. The Post has learned Letitia James' office obtained a warrant to search the home, SUV, and phones of Jenny Rivera, chief executive of Aguilo Incorporated. The search warrant says investigators have probable cause to investigate Rivera and unnamed co-conspirators for the host of alleged crimes, including commercial bribery and bribes, receiving grand larceny, criminal possessions of stolen property, falsifying business records, false instrument filing, money laundering. The Post, the New York Post, reported Sunday that the AG also is investigating Bronx County Clerk Luis Diaz, who was suspended from his duties by the court system. Pending the outcome of the probe, Diaz, a former assemblyman, is being targeted for his ties to Aguila, sources familiar with the probe said. Aguila Incorporated has been awarded $250 million in city contracts to provide shelter for the homeless. 2012, through Rivera complained in a letter to Mayor de Blasio last year that it lost business because of disputes with Department of Homeless Services. Audit in the past by the city controller office had identified shady and unsafe conditions at some its shelters and lack oversight by the city Department of Homeless Services. Rivera and Aguila Incorporated had no immediate comments. The attorney general office declined comments. Corruption involving non-for-profit groups intended to help needy is nothing new in the Bronx. So, we have a corruption going on in New York City providers by not giving the most vulnerable what they need. I think that's a very bad thing that's going on in here in New York City. There's a lot of corruption going on with services and money being, you know, sent out, and you know, a lot of people are not receiving the help for the services that they're supposed to be getting because the money is disappearing. And especially in the homeless community, people are dehumanized, ladies and gentlemen, and not giving a fair, you know, share of help these days. You know, people just want to write people off, but we have city agencies doing business with shady people who are supposed to be supplying a service, but the money is going into their personal bank accounts. So these are what folks are up against here in New York who are homeless. Shady dealing of businesses, I should say shady service dealings. How the homeless is being shortchanged once again, you know. So I'd like to thank you for listening to Marcus More More Media podcast. For any comments and questions, ladies and gentlemen, you can email me at morehomesteaders@gmail.com. Today's date is October the 8th, 2020. I wish you and yours a very delightful good night. Thank you for listening. And for any comments and questions, ladies and gentlemen, please send me an email, throw me a comment, tell me what you think. Maybe some things you might want to ask me. Okay? My name is Marcus More More Media. Have a good night, everybody.
Los caseros quieren alquilar a los apartamentos. Y pues, esto es un problema que se generó, que radicó.
I'd like to thank y'all for joining me today. My name is Marcus More and More Media. Today's date is November 26, 2020. We're going to be talking a little bit about a day of action for disability people. So we're going to listen in and we're going to get started.
National Day for People with Disabilities. So this is something that the PPA has been involved in for a while. This would be our fifth annual PPA International Day for People with Disabilities event or action. I believe it could be six or seven. I believe it's fifth though, but correct me if I'm wrong, someone. So we're still in our planning phases of what's going to be happening for this day, International Day for People with Disabilities. In the past, we've done like little demos and walkthroughs, actions at like Corporate Authority, for example. Last year, we really tried to make it a big part of our campaign was bringing awareness to how inaccessible the subway system is. I think it was something like 70% of subway stops in New York City don't have elevator access, more than that, 77% maybe. I'm not sure, maybe someone can correct me on that. But a very high statistic, and even in ones in which there are elevators or the quote-unquote accessible stations, a lot of the time the elevators are out of use, things like that. Just bringing awareness to what a lot of people have to deal with and every, you know, day that the average worker doesn't even consider. I think I, you know, learned a lot in planning for that campaign and trying to think about just ways in which, you know, to bring more awareness to the issue. But I'll defer a moment to Terry, who's definitely more in the know about what we're going to be doing this year. If you'd like, Terry.
Okay, hi everyone. So this will be our sixth annual participation International Day of People with Disabilities. So this has been going on. The day itself has been going on for almost 20 years, 22 years, 24 years. it was a holiday declared by the UN, and PPA's particular take on it has been around, the first couple focused on police brutality of Black disabled folks. Jeremy McDowell was famous case, Ezell Ford, but Jeremy McDowell was the young man in the wheelchair that was killed by police. So the story goes, I don't know if he was breaking up a fight or if he witnessed the fight, and someone, I think it was him, he called the police. He wound up getting killed by them. So our particular focus, like I said, has been police brutality. Then we've also talked about housing and healthcare and wages not being comparable for to able-bodied folks. You know, people with disabilities, they're often exploited by their employer. They can earn as little as whatever the prevailing wages for servers. I think it's like $2.10 an hour. It's legal for companies to pay disabled folks that wage. And the last couple of years, we focused on police brutality as well as MTA not being accessible. And we've also talked about fair, combined it with our fair evasion, or connected with our fair evasion. And I also talked about this issue at the Workers' Assembly Against Racism Saturday, you know, so connecting it all to the struggles, all the struggles are interconnected because like 56% of the people that are murdered by police happen to be disabled people. So if you think about that, that's a very high number, and a high percentage of those disabled folks are neurodivergent, or what people may term emotionally disturbed people. So this year, we're going to we're thinking about having some type of performative action earlier in the day, and this is going to be very short and short clip
at the evening webinar, but you know that might go by the wayside because I think it's going to be very cold December 3rd. So we might just confine it just to the Zoom webinar. And some of the things we're going to talk about, hopefully, is how disabled folks are been affected by this COVID crisis. What are some other topics? We're going to talk about maybe have a short presenter to talk about neurodivergency, how it differs, how it's the same, compare and contrast it with other disabilities that oftentimes a hidden disability. Other issues, we may talk about intersectionality. I'm not sure we'll talk about intersectionality because of time. I'm a Black, disabled, queer woman, so I fall under a lot of, I have multiple disabilities. I have one physical, I have one chronic, medical, and dealing with that has also given me some anxiety, well not some, so anxiety disorder. With the person being disabled, that's part of their identity, and being folks in the LGBTQ spectrum. So we're just going to talk about the different intersections and how we can strengthen disability justice within our movements, because it's often relegated as a side note. And I've tried hard to give the PPA to not, doesn't have to be the main, but it's main thing. It's not like a main thing, it's all connected with the struggle of housing and healthcare, police brutality and state sanctioned violence that Rad talked about earlier, you know, not being able to have adequate health care. And I'll use myself again as an example. I needed help, you know, doing just errand household tasks for many years. I wasn't able to get that help. Then $50 a month, then you would qualify to get Medicaid. They call this person, Medicaid for working people with disabilities or something like that. But that enabled me to get a meal delivered, you know, like 7 meals delivered. That enables me to have a home attendant to help with the errands and do shopping and laundry and stuff like that. And over the past, I want to say three, since this idiot has been in office, I mean, I call him an idiot, but he's dangerous. Since he's been in office, whatever tampering they did with the ACA took away a lot of, I think it was a buy-in, something that disabled folks needed that didn't have Medicaid. And so it raised their deductible, what they had to pay out of pocket, from about maybe $1,200 to $2,000 a year to up to $7,000 and more. So a lot of people wound up losing their health care that they needed, where they wound up paying more out of pocket. And if you know disabled folks, you know, like 25% of folks that are at the poverty level are disabled. So when we talk about COVID, you know, people that disabled folks that were able to work were furloughed. So any health care they had, they lost access to the medicine or whatever treatments they were taking. And you know, they installed this Supreme Court that keeps trying to do a death by a thousand cuts to the ACA, and that will cause a lot of disabled folks to lose their health care. The other thing. So it's all connected, that's what I want to say. I mean, I've said it before. It's all of the struggles are connected. And like,
I'd like to thank y'all for listening to More Media Podcast. If you like this episode, please feel free to donate as I continue to go through the neighborhoods and find the stories that community are definitely impacted with. So I'd like to thank you once again for listening to Marcus More and More Media. Stay safe. Keep looking up. I'd like to thank you for listening to Marcus More and More Media. I'd like to thank folks from outside United States for listening. It's definitely been a pleasure for you guys to invite me into your house and be part of your family in these days and times as we all are experiencing a worldwide pandemic here in United States as well as around the world. And so the time will come when we'll be able to all gather freely and be around each other. But right now, we have to try to stay safe and use social distancing these days and times. So, you know, you got to wear those face masks and gloves and, you know, keep your hands clean. And you know, you got to continue to, you know, get testing and all that sort of stuff. So I know it's a challenge, but we have to do these things right now to stay safe. So with that being said, I have a big treat for you guys today. I got a chance to go to a press conference for the group Homeless Can't Stay Home campaign. And so this was the group that activists and community leaders was able to, you know, sponsor 30 individuals in the first wave that we had to put individuals safely up in hotels because the city just wasn't doing it. The mayor and the governor here in New York City didn't really think too much of homeless people at the time to really keep them safe. So a bunch of activists and community leaders got together and decided that they was going to sponsor and help some folks to stay safe from the coronavirus, right? And so we know that nobody didn't see this pandemic coming in New York City and around the world. But the group in the campaign, Homeless Can't Stay Home, told their local officials that, you know, we have to be better prepared to be able to help the most vulnerable people if it's a second wave. And here it is a second wave. And it seems like homeless lives here in New York City is not even value at all. And so we're going to get into some interviews and talks with some of our members from the Homeless Can't Stay Home campaign. You know, they're going to talk about how there are, you know, some emergency housing that can be utilized by HPD here in New York City. And so we're going to listen in. Our first person we're going to listen in on is a nice young lady. If you go to the Homeless Can't Stay Home website, you'll get a chance to see her and hear her story. And you can't believe, ladies and gentlemen, everything that you hearing and all the stereotypes that you hear about homeless people, all homeless people, or drug addicts, drunks, and, you know, they don't want nothing. You know, you have people that likes to form these little groups, and you got media, mainstream media out there that wants to, you know, take pictures of homeless people and their pain and their poverty and their misery as they, you know, people need to be housed. You know, people are out there sick on the street, need to be in places where they can stay warm and safe, you know. And so we're going to listen in on Ashley, a young lady from the Homeless Can't Stay Home campaign right now. So we're going to listen to Ashley.
Time after time.
So, that was Ashley. As you can hear in her conversation, ladies and gentlemen, here in New York City, it's hard to even be able to use a bathroom. You know, stores are closed. You know, you just can't go anywhere and use the bathroom. You know, this not enough bathrooms are open for the public to use. And so when you're sick and got, you know, your health is up and down like that young lady, you know, it's very hard, you know. And so we're going to listen in on our next person. I believe her name is Sarah. Thank you for that, Ashley. Okay.
Thank you, Mark.
Yes, you're welcome. So, so Sarah's coming in a little choppy, ladies and gentlemen, but she's basically talking about how the conditions are in the shelter system when you're in the shelter and you're homeless, right? And how people are not eating the way they should be eating to be able to maintain their health. And so we're going to hear a little bit more from Sarah in a little bit. But right now we're gonna get into some more conversation with members from the Homeless Can't Stay Home campaign. We have the city agencies right now continuing to transfer members from the shelter system around in the world pandemic. So who you hearing right now, ladies and gentlemen, is Peter Melvin, another member of the Homeless Can't Stay Home campaign. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Marcus Moore, Moore Media. I hope everybody is staying warm, comfortable, safe these days. You know, it's the first day of winter here in New York City. Today, Moore Media shines the spotlight on a small group in East Albario and Harlem, New York City. This group been doing a lot of great work over the years. And I remember, you know, when I first came across the mission statement, it just blew me away. The name of this group, they call themselves Picture the Homeless. And this group, ladies and gentlemen, is made up of homeless people who are homeless and formerly homeless. Okay, the organization was founded by two homeless men living in Bellevue Homeless Shelter in New York City. And we know that New York City right now around the country is going through a lot of changes right now with racism, with NIMBY and the Upper West Side. And here you got this here group, Picture the Homeless, has been doing great work. When I read their mission statement, ladies and gentlemen, it just blew me away. I said, wow. You got to hear this, ladies and gentlemen. This is Picture the Homeless mission statement. It says, Picture the Homeless was founded on the principles that homeless people have civil and human rights, regardless of our race, color, creed, sexual orientation, or identity, or immigration, or economic status. Picture the Homeless was founded and is led by homeless people. We refuse to accept being neglected, and we demand that our voices and experiences are heard at all levels of decision-making that impact us. We oppose the quality of life laws that criminalize people in any form by the city, state, and national government. We work to change these laws and policies as well as to challenge the root cause of homelessness. Our strategies include grassroots organizing, direct action, and educating homeless people about their rights, public educating, and changing media stereotypes and building relationship with allies. So, Picture the Homeless, the organization, ladies and gentlemen, I was informed that they was able to finally come through on creating low-income housing for people in their community. This group, Picture the Homeless, East Harlem El Barrio Community Land Trust. And a community land trust is so much needed these days around the country, with bankers speculating and communities are just, you know, displaced. You know, my hats go off to this here group right here, you know. East Harlem, New York City. Yes, it says right here, it says in East Harlem, a historical deal has been made that Picture the Homeless have helped to make a community land trust in their community for low-income people like themselves right here. And it says 36 apartments, 14 will be available to tenants earning 35% of the area median income, about $36,800 for single persons, and 18 will be open to those earning 100% of the AMI. Remaining 4 units will be reserved for people experiencing homelessness. So my hat goes off to the organization out there in New York City, East Harlem Community Land Trust and El Barrio. This is the first time I believe that there is a community trust, a community land trust in El Barrio. And my hat goes off to those formerly and homeless people that went out there throughout the years and made that happen for themselves and their community. So this is the first time, you know, ladies and gentlemen, that you hear about stuff like this here in the United States. A homeless and formerly homeless group. You know, you got a lot of homeless groups, folks, but you don't have a lot of homeless found organization. I'm talking about organization that was founded by homeless people and that's led by homeless people. You have groups like Coalition for the Hunger and different food banks and different things like that. But what makes this group, folks, different from the herd? They are homeless found. So they founders was homeless themselves, living in New York City in the homeless shelter. Wow. And then this same group, years later, come back and create a community land trust in their community. Wow. And this was done by homeless and formerly homeless people. So, ladies and gentlemen, it seems like if you want to get involved with this group or you want to know more about this group, you can definitely mail them at 1000 Dean Street, Suite 432, Brooklyn, New York. Zip code there is 11238. The office number there is 718-622-1260. And they do have an email. It says homelessnewyorkers@yahoo.com. So it says, don't talk about us, talk with us. So that's this evening's spotlight on the agenda here at More Media this evening night. Picture the homeless. Don't talk about us, talk with us. So folks, thanks for listening. I hope you stay warm. I hope you stay safe. And don't forget, keep on looking up. And this is More Media. And so, ladies and gentlemen, if you feel free and you like what you're hearing, to all my peoples out there, please feel free to donate to More Media as we continue to go out there and spotlight groups like, you know, the ones you just got through hearing, where it's not, you know, mainstream media is not really interesting a lot of times. You know, we know about the NIMBY and the negativity that's going on in New York City with NIMBY and racism and, you know, people being displaced and don't want certain people to live in certain parts in the community and whatnot. But we also want to change those narratives at More Media. We want to be able to show the good things that's going on in these uncertain times. And so as we go and we dig deep and go far into the communities and different places where mainstream media don't go, More Media do go. So I like to ask you, you know, folks, that you are, you know, think twice and you know, open your hearts and won't mind donating to, you know, More Media. So that can be $1, $5, or even 50 cents. Every cent counts. So once again, folks, I'd like to thank you for listening and inviting me into your hearts, your living room, you know, different places around United States and also in other places outside the United States. So I'd like to just thank you and ask you that you will continue to keep listening and keep looking up. Thank you. More Media. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Marcus Moore, More Media. I hope everybody is staying warm, comfortable, safe these days. You know, it's the first day of winter here in New York City. Today, More Media shines the spotlight on a small group in East Albario and Harlem, New York City. This group been doing a lot of great work over the years. And I remember, you know, when I first came across their mission statement, it just blew me away. The name of this group, they call themselves Picture the Homeless. And this group, ladies and gentlemen, is made up of homeless people who are homeless and formerly homeless. Okay, the organization was founded by two homeless men living in Bellevue Homeless Shelter in New York City. And we know that New York City right now around the country is going through a lot of changes right now with racism, with NIMBY and the Upper West Side. And here you got this here group, Picture the Homeless, has been doing great work. When I read their mission statement, ladies and gentlemen, it just blew me away. I said, wow. You got to hear this, ladies and gentlemen. This is Picture the Homeless mission statement. It says, Picture the Homeless was founded on the principles that homeless people have civil and human rights, regardless of our race, color, creed, sexual orientation, or identity, or immigration, or economic status. Picture the Homeless was founded and is led by homeless people. We refuse to accept being neglected, and we demand that our voices and experiences are heard at all levels of decision-making that impact us. We oppose the quality of life laws that criminalize people in any form by the city, state, and national government. We work to change these laws and policies as well as to challenge the root cause of homelessness. Our strategies include grassroots organizing, direct action, and educating homeless people about their rights, public educating, and changing media stereotypes and building relationship with allies. So, picture the Homeless, the organization, ladies and gentlemen, I was informed that they was able to finally come through on creating low-income housing for people in their community. This group, Picture the Homeless, East Harlem El Barrio Community Land Trust. And a community land trust is so much needed these days around the country, with bankers speculating and communities are just, you know, displaced. You know, my hats go off to this here group right here, you know. East Harlem, New York City. Yes, it says right here, in East Harlem, a historical deal has been made that Picture the Homeless have helped to make a community land trust in their community for low-income people like themselves right here. And it says 36 apartments, 14 will be available to tenants earning 35% of the area median income, about $36,800 for single persons, and 18 will be open to those earning 100% of the AMI. Remaining 4 units will be reserved for people experiencing homelessness. So my hat goes off to the organization out there in New York City, East Harlem Community Land Trust in El Barrio. This is the first time I believe that there is a community trust, a community land trust in El Barrio. And my hat goes off to those formerly and homeless people that went out there throughout the years and made that happen for themselves and their community. So this is the first time, you know, ladies and gentlemen, that you hear about stuff like this here in the United States. A homeless and formerly homeless group. You know, you got a lot of homeless groups, folks, but you don't have a lot of homeless found organization. I'm talking about organization that was founded by homeless people and that's led by homeless people. You have groups like Coalition for the Hunger and different food banks and different things like that. But what makes this group, folks, different from the herd? They are homeless found. So they founders was homeless themselves, living in New York City in the homeless shelter. Wow. And then this same group, years later, come back and create a community land trust in their community. Wow. And this was done by homeless and formerly homeless people. So, ladies and gentlemen, it seems like if you want to get involved with this group or you want to know more about this group, you can definitely mail them at 1000 Dean Street, Suite 432, Brooklyn, New York. Zip code there is 11238. The office number there is 718-622-1260. And they do have an email. It says homelessnewyorkers@yahoo.com. So it says, don't talk about us, talk with us. So that's this evening's spotlight on the agenda here at More Media this evening night. Picture the Homeless. Don't talk about us, talk with us. So, folks, thanks for listening. I hope you stay warm. I hope you stay safe. And don't forget, keep on looking up. And this is More Media. And so, ladies and gentlemen, if you feel free and you like what you're hearing, to all my peoples out there, please feel free to donate to More Media as we continue to go out there and spotlight groups like, you know, the ones you just got through hearing, where it's not, you know, mainstream media is not really interesting a lot of times. You know, we know about the NIMBY and the negativity that's going on in New York City with NIMBY and racism and, you know, people being displaced and don't want certain people to live in certain parts in the community and whatnot. But we also want to change those narratives at More Media. We want to be able to show the good things that's going on in these uncertain times. And so as we go and we dig deep and go far into the communities and different places where mainstream media don't go, More Media do go. So I'd like to ask you, folks, that you would, you know, think twice and, you know, open your hearts and won't mind donating to, you know, More Media. So that can be $1, $5, or even 50 cents. Every cent counts. So once again, folks, I'd like to thank you for listening and inviting me into your hearts, your living room, you know, different places around United States and also in other places outside the United States. So I'd like to just thank you and ask you that you will continue to keep listening and keep looking up. Thank you. More Media.